You're listening to SBS News.
I still remember on the 30th of April, 1975, we heard some gunshots outside our house. There were some helicopters flying above, and my parents quickly gathered all the kids. I was one of four kids. I was the youngest of four kids. And they said, go and lie flat under the bed. So if there are gunshots, you're less likely to get shot. And if there's a bomb and the roof collapsed, then the bed might protect us. They took our house, our car, our pets, our livelihood. They sent my dad to prison camp where he was tortured mentally and physically. And when he came back, they put us in an old rundown studio apartment, walls covered with soot. And in 1977, my brother nearly drowned at the local pool. So he was resuscitated, but then they, instead of getting an ambulance or get driven to hospital, they put on a wheelbarrow and pushed him there. So the trip took 2 hours and he died on the way to the hospital. So like in a beautiful country like Australia, the ambulance would have come picked him up. He would have been in hospital. He would have survived. I used to have dreams about it every single night for about 20 years that my brother was swept out in the ocean, and then God appeared out of the sky and said, either your brother go or you go. Would you like to take his place? And I used to say, yes, God, please let me go instead of him. And I kept having the recurrent nightmares. But with time, my parents have taught me, and with the mindfulness practice I've learned, I know that my brother lives on in me, and also my parents have now passed away, and I believe that they live on in me as well. I still get emotional when I think about this or when I talk about it, but very soon I'll be smiling again, knowing that I am them, they are me, and they live on in me, and that's the drive for me to work so hard all these years. So that they can live on and do their charity, help other people and be happy.
You said it was so hard that's why your parents made the decision to leave by boat, even though 2 out of 3 people would perish during that journey.
We would be better off sinking, you know, down the ocean than living under such constant persecutions. So we escaped on a boat, and I still remember vividly, very accurately. It was 24 meters long, 10 meters wide, and they built 2 decks below, like 2 shelves, 2 massive shelves on each side below the deck. And they took 474 people, everybody sitting upright. And
so extremely overcrowded.
Yes, with just 1 toilet at the end. At the rear of the boat, and so there was a constant queue. I only had to go to the toilet once because I was so seasick. I was vomiting constantly for the whole 3 days that I was on that boat. Barely ate or drank anything. My parents always try to make everything positive for us. So I wasn't really scared at the beginning. I just thought, well, we're just going to get on the boat. But after the first day of vomiting and feeling so sick, I got really scared because I'm in the middle of an ocean and the boat is rocking all over the place. And so I was so frightened that we're going to tip over and sink. And we later were told that the way the boat was designed is not for the sea, it's for the river. So it's very, very unsteady because the bottom was very flat. And then the second day, we were attacked by pirates. And it was well known that pirates would attack these refugee boats because they know the boat people bring everything they own, usually little pieces of gold. And they would attack to get those gold, but they also rape and slaughter and kill all these refugees. So we were very lucky. Someone told all the women and children to go below the deck, and they brought all the men up. There were more than 100 men jumping up and down, screaming at the pirates, and the pirates somehow got a bit scared of the confrontation, so they left. We was very lucky. And then the third day, there was a storm, and it was getting dark, and there was massive waves splashing all over the boat, and I just felt like a big dragon gonna swallow all of us. So it was quite frightening. And we were lucky because after we shipwrecked in Malaysia, we hear all these stories about people seeing their wife getting raped and slaughtered, and they managed to escape and swim to shore, and all 474 of us survived for some miracle. My dad said it was so lucky that it actually tilted towards the beach. If it tilted the other way, I think most of us would have drowned and died. So when it leaned towards the water, people just jumped off and swam in. Someone picked me up, and a man picked me up and threw me down. And a man was standing underneath. He sort of caught me, grabbed me, and threw me onto the beach. And we were all separated. I started running back and forth along this dark beach. And I thought, I didn't see my parents, didn't see my sisters. And I thought, that's the end of the world. I've lost my whole family. And then eventually I found them. And we were all alive, and we were just the happiest family in the world. We just had a shirt on our back, but we had each other. We were all alive. So we all just cuddled up there and waited a couple of hours until the police gathered all of us up and took us to this place, an old factory. The floor was covered with oily dirt, like 1 centimeter of oily dirt. But we all just lie there and rested for the night. It was just amazing that we're all alive. So after a few days at that old factory, they transferred us to this deserted island where they kept all the refugees. We actually, despite the hardship of the living conditions, we were so happy because we knew that we were free. And we knew for sure some wonderful, kind country is gonna take us in. My parents are just the whole world to me. I think it started with how we were educated, how we should love and respect our parents. But it's the love and care and sacrifices they gave us. They would die for us without even having a second thought. And what happened? They didn't have any money, but my dad had a watch left because he happened to be wearing it when we shipwrecked. So he sold that watch, and then later on, they sold their wedding rings. And in Malaysia, some Malaysian locals, they do get their boats across to the island, and then they trade these things. So when he sold those things, he was able to buy toothbrushes and thongs. And my dad bought us an apple each. And I still remember the apple. It was just the most beautiful thing I've ever eaten in my whole life. No matter how privileged we were before 1975, that apple was just so amazing. And innocently, as a little kid, I said to my dad, you know, when you have some more money, can you please buy me another apple? And he said, yes, of course, smiling, as he always does. He always smiled, regardless how much we suffered. He always smiled to us. It was like 1,000 knives stabbing to his heart because he knew that he'll never be able to buy me another apple until we go to another country.
So your family applied to come to Australia. It was a 9-month wait. You arrived in September of 1979. Mm. You were 10 years old at the time.
I still remember. It was 26th of September 1979, which now we think about it, it's not that cold, but it was just so cold. And we were taken again at night. And when we got to the hostel where they kept refugees, we thought, wow, we're going into a brick house and a roof that's not going to be blown away when there's a strong wind. And then we came in and there's these mattresses, and we jumped on the mattresses and we thought, this is like lying on a cloud in heaven.
And how did you and your family adapt to life, you know, halfway around the world in a totally different culture?
It was very difficult, but my dad self-taught English and he tried to teach us a little bit. So we know a tiny bit, but it was really difficult to learn a new language and also a new culture. I just, because of how much I appreciate and love my parents for the love and care that they've given me and the sacrifices, I said, I'm going to work so hard so that I can look after them in their old age. And so I started year five in 1980, and I got this homework book, maths homework book for the whole year. The next weekend, I finished the whole year's work, I handed it to my teacher, and he was so shocked. He said, I've never seen this before. You know, what am I going to teach you for the rest of the year? I said, well, I just want to work. And we just, and my parents always taught me that we should really appreciate Australia for taking us in. He said, the Australian government is so kind, and Australian people, this is heaven, and all these people are saints. They just take people in like this and feed them and house them and give them education and provide a future, provide hope. And so they taught me that we should always have to respect the law and work really hard so that we can contribute to society and help other people who are more unfortunate than us, because we were so fortunate. I mean, I would like to do something that I could help other people reduce their suffering. And I thought, you know, this is, becoming a doctor would most likely be the best position to do that. And then becoming a GP is easier to do that because you're the front line. And you see everyone.
If you enjoyed this, you can find more SBS features on our website, or from your favourite podcaster like iTunes, Spotify, Acast, Stitcher, or Wooshka.